Have you seen those commercials that have someone holding up a sign with a short text message? And that was the last text message that somebody read while driving before they were in a car accident that killed them? Those are pretty attention-grabbing commercials, and they really get you to think about the consequences. There's also one of those commercials that show a man who is now brain damaged because he was a passenger in a car of somebody who was reading a short text message. And there's also one of a man who hit and killed a person who was riding a bicycle because he was reading a text message. I was watching some of these on the internet last night or yesterday, and it was kind of a longer one, one that wouldn't show on TV, and it was giving more interviews, and this one interview was from a highway patrol officer who came upon the scene of one of these, and he had a line that really stuck with me. He said, "What is worth losing your life over? This text message?" And these commercials, they show these pointless messages. Yeah, where are you at? LOL. That people were reading at the time. None of these messages were important. It would only take a few seconds to read a short text like that. Just a few seconds. But just a few seconds, their attention was away from the road. They were distracted. If you're traveling at 60 miles per hour and you look away for about 3.5 seconds, you've traveled the length of a football field. About 300 feet. It's a lot of space to cover in a short amount of time, and even a quick distraction can cause a lot of damage. I'm not going to talk about distracted driving this morning. That's just an example. I want to talk about distracted living. Distracted living. One of the main inspirations for this lesson is our two cats. When we were thinking about getting a couple cats last year, I wasn't totally for it. Sarah and Ethan, or Ethan especially, thought I didn't like cats. And that's not the case. I like cats. It was just that I knew that they were going to be a distraction, that they are going to distract us from other parts of our lives, and they are. There are nights when we're saying the prayer for supper and we hear a noise where they jump on our lap and we have to take a peek and make sure that they're not getting up on the counter and into the food. Or again, if they jump on our lap and we've got to worry about them not clawing us. So they are a distraction. Another inspiration for this lesson was, well, how I prepare a lesson. I like to, with the convenience of a laptop computer, sit in front of the TV and write. I don't get much done that way because I am distracted. I can usually do a little bit of the research, like looking up stories or quotes or facts, items like that. But once I need to actually write the lesson and think about what I want to say, I need to get the distractions away from me, and I usually go to my office at that time, and it does eliminate all the distractions, but definitely cuts down the biggest one, the TV. Distractions can come at us in about three different ways: visual, manual, and cognitive. Visual, obviously, involving your eyes; manual, involving our hands; cognitive, involving our mind. Texting while driving distracts drivers in all of those ways. They're looking at their phone. One hand is holding the phone, and their mind, the person's mind, is processing the words on the phone. Even simple tasks like changing the radio station, looking at a map, or eating are forms of distracted driving. Your attention is not solely on the road or controlling your car. When drivers are distracted, when our lives are distracted, accidents can happen and lives can be wrecked. Distraction is the divided attention from the chosen object of attention onto the source of the distraction. Distractions take our focus away from the object of our attention. I read that the average office worker switches tasks every 3 minutes, and once distracted, a worker takes nearly half an hour to resume the original task. So if they're working on something, they get distracted. It takes them about 30 minutes on average, they said, to get back to fully their sole attention is back on what they're supposed to be doing. Distractions can be caused by the lack of ability to pay attention, the lack of interest in the object of attention, or the great intensity, the newness, or attractiveness of the distraction. Distractions in our spiritual life come from the devil. He puts distractions in our way to draw our attention away from God. When Paul was writing about the spiritual armor that we must put on ourselves in order to protect ourselves, this is in the 6th chapter of Ephesians, Paul also writes about what or who we're fighting. Ephesians 6 and 12, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." We are not fighting the things of this world. We're fighting against the rulers of the darkness of this age, the devil. And he has many ways to fight us. 1 Peter 5 and 8 says he's aggressive, that he's going to come after us like a lion. "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." But the devil can be sneaky as well. Because he is the father of lies, he can appear to be something good. 2 Corinthians 11, 13 and 14. "For such are apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light." You remember I said that distractions are visual, physical, and mental. 1 John 2, 15 and 16. "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, physical, the lust of the eyes, visual, and the pride of life, mental, is not of the Father, but is of the world." So as we drive along in our spiritual lives, we need to try to avoid the distractions that the devil puts in our way to attempt us to take our eyes off the road, our hands off the wheel, and our minds off serving God. We need to keep our attention on the work at hand. Because once we give in to distraction, it's harder to get our attention back. We're going to be reading from the book of Nehemiah, if you want to turn there. At the beginning of the book of Nehemiah, there are a large number of Jews that are still in captivity. And the Jews were taken. Jerusalem was burnt. And so a lot of these Jews are in captivity. But some Jews have escaped and gone back to Jerusalem. And in chapter 1, Nehemiah learns that the wall of Jerusalem is broken down. There's a big wall around the city and to protect it, but this wall has been broken down and the gates have been burned. Jerusalem is defenseless. So in chapter 2, after much praying, Nehemiah goes before the king of Persia, and asks if he can go to Jerusalem to rebuild this wall around the city of his father. And he is allowed to. Something I found interesting is that the king at this time was Artaxerxes, who was the son of Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, depending on which version you're reading. But this This Xerxes is who is mentioned in the book of Esther, and who took Esther to be his queen. So Xerxes is no longer alive at this time, but it's very likely that Esther could be. This is only about 30 years after the events that we read in Esther. So it could be likely that Esther, the stepmom, so to speak, of this king at this time, might have played a part in convincing the king to allow Nehemiah to go back to Jerusalem. So when Nehemiah goes back to Jerusalem, he inspects the wall, walks around the town, around the city, inspecting it. And in chapter 2, starting in verse 17, you can hear his plan. It says, "Then I said to them," the Jews, "you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach. And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also of the king's words that were spoken to me. So they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' Then they set their hands to this good work." Nehemiah is going to work at rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem. That is what his attention is going to be on. That is going to be his job and his focus. 1 Corinthians 15 and 58 says, "Therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." We have work to do for the Lord. We have work to do for the Lord. That is our attention, is to work for the Lord, to serve Him, to obey Him. That is what our attention should be on. If we give in to the distractions that come in our lives, we're going to wreck. Some of us may be building a wall for the first time, going to work for the first time. Some of us may be rebuilding a wall that we have built before and have had it come down. We need to rebuild it. But we have work to do for God by serving Him. In Nehemiah, there were people who did not want this wall rebuilt. They didn't want Jerusalem to be defended again. They didn't want Nehemiah to lead God's people in rebuilding the wall around the city. So they wanted to distract Nehemiah from his work. When the king sent Nehemiah back to Jerusalem, he also sent with him two letters, at least two letters. The letters to allow him to pass safely through the lands until he got to Jerusalem, and another letter to allow him to cut down trees from the king's forest to be able to use for beams for the gates. And on his way, he would show these letters as proof that he had been given permission. In chapter 2, verse 9 and 10, we meet two of the men who were wanting to distract Nehemiah, who heard about these letters and heard about his plan and didn't like it so much. So Nehemiah chapter 2, 9 through 10, and I'll be reading mostly from the New King James. It says, "Then I went to the governors in the region beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. When Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard of it, they were deeply disturbed that a man had come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel." And then a few verses later, in 19, we're introduced to a third person. "But when Sanballat, the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they laughed at us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing you are doing? Will you rebel against the king?'" So we have three officials: Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. Three people, three officials of three groups of people that are wanting to distract Nehemiah from building this wall. In chapter 3, I'm not going to read from chapter 3. Chapter 3 is how they start rebuilding the wall. It's about which families build what parts. But they haven't completed it yet. But they've gotten a good start. So we go to chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, and we can hear of these men's reaction. But it so happened, when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant, and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren with the army of Samaria, and said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him and said, "Whatever they build, even if a fox goes up to it, he will break down their stone wall." And then a couple verses later, 7 and 8, says, "Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, that they became very angry, and all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion." They wanted to create confusion. They wanted to distract these people, the Jews and Nehemiah, from building this wall. They didn't want this wall built because they were used to not having the Jews there. They were used to having this place empty. They had maybe come in and taken over it. They didn't want this wall built. There are going to be people like Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem in our lives who will not be happy with the work we are doing. They will not be pleased with the wall that we are building in our lives. This wall in our lives may keep them out of our lives. Many of these people could be bad influences in our lives. Maybe they were used to controlling us before, being able to have their say over what we do, be able to lead us where they wanted to lead us. But if we built this wall, if we do the work of serving God and have a wall built, it may keep them out of our lives. So we could face distraction from people. So how would Nehemiah respond to these distractions, this confusion of these people that are trying to attack? By remaining focused on his work. Just a couple verses before, kind of in the middle of the last two I read, verses 4 and 6. It says, "So we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together up to half its height." So it was about half the height that it will be when it's completed. But this last part, "for the people had a mind to work." I like that phrase in the New International. It says, "For the people worked with all their heart." Nehemiah and the Jews were able to rebuild the wall up to half its height because the people had a mind to work, and they worked with all their heart. I would say that this was a mental distraction placed before Nehemiah and the Jews. That confusion, that's going to be a mental game. And they had to overcome that mental distraction of these people wanting to come and attack them. So instead of thinking about these armies, they kept their mind on their work. Kept their mind on building the wall. To avoid the mental distractions in our lives that could lead us away from God, we need to keep our mind on our work. We need to keep our mind on serving God. We need to focus on serving Him. Keep our attention on Him. Psalms 1, verse 2. "But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night." And Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you have learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you." We need to focus on our work. We need to meditate on the things of God, the things that are good. Focus on serving God. We shouldn't be thinking about what we're missing in the world. By serving Him, what we're missing out on, we need to think about what they're missing out on by not serving God. continuing with the story of Nehemiah, continuing with chapter 4, verse 9. This was some of Nehemiah's response as well. It says, "Nevertheless, we made our prayer to God, to our God, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night, against the people who would come. Then Judah said, 'The strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall.' And our adversary said, 'They will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease.' So it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came that they told us 10 times, 'From whatever place you turn, they will be upon us.' Therefore, I positioned men in the lower parts of the wall and their openings, and I set people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the leaders and to the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses.' And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us, and that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work." In order to fight against distractions, it helps if we stay busy with the work. These people were getting scared. They were beginning to talk about what they were going to do. They were trying to turn. "From whatever place you turn, they will be upon us." I can see them just turning from place to place, looking for where they were going to be attacked. Instead, Nehemiah set them back to work. Focus on the wall. Focus on your work. Nehemiah kept his hands busy, and he kept the hands of the Jews busy. When the distractions of an invading army was trying to distract them, he kept their hands busy. And I find that they were even multitaskers. If you continue in verse 16, it says, "So it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction, while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, who wore the armor. And the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction and with the other held a weapon. Every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me." Even though they were worried about an invasion, Nehemiah kept them busy. He had half of them be soldiers, be guards, so that the people doing the work didn't have to worry about doing both. But yet he was still prepared. He gave them still a sword, so that if they needed it, they would have it. But he kept them busy. He kept their hands doing the work. We need to keep our hands busy doing the work of God, not for the work of the world. So from chapter 4, I'll skip to chapter 6. At this time, the wall is built, except for the gates. So there's about 5 gates or so I counted around the city. But most of the wall is up. The wall is up, but there are still a few gaps. It's not totally secure yet. So Nehemiah still has some work to do. He has to pay attention to what his job is and not be distracted. I'll read verses 1 through 4 of chapter 6. "Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had rebuilt the wall and that there were no more breaks left in it, though at that time I had not hung the doors and the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent to me, saying, 'Come, let us meet together among the villages in the plain of Ono.' But they thought to do me harm. So I sent messengers to them, saying, 'I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it to go down to you?' But they sent this message 4 times, and I answered them in the same manner." Nehemiah's enemies seem to be giving in. They seem to be conceding the fight. That, okay, the wall's built, you won, let's just come and talk. But they know there's still openings there. Nehemiah knows his work is not done. It would have taken Nehemiah about a day to get to the city of Ono, which would have been a clue for them. Oh no, don't go to Ono. So he would have been gone about 2 days, there and back. So for 2 days, the wall might not have gotten built if he wasn't there to lead them. But also, he thought that they had evil intentions. He thought that harm was going to come to him. We need to be careful where people invite us to go. We need to ask, what will happen when we're away? Will our wall continue to be built when we're gone? Will we be able to still work at serving God when we're gone, when we're there? If I'm distracted and my attention is placed elsewhere, will I continue to work for God? If we go, are we going into a trap that may do us harm? These are questions that Nehemiah asked, and it served him well. He was able to avoid that distraction. But these people didn't stop. They tried again. Verses 5 through 9. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me as before, the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand. In it was written, "It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says, that you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you are rebuilding the wall so that you may be their king. And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying, 'There is a king in Judah.' Now these matters will be reported to the king of Persia. So come, therefore, and let us consult together." Then I sent to him, saying, "No such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart. For they were all trying to make us afraid, saying, 'Their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done.' Now, therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." Sanballat was now trying to make the people afraid, make Nehemiah afraid that they were going to send these stories up to the king of Persia that Jerusalem is rebuilding, that Nehemiah is going to make himself king. And that was supposed to send fear into them, that, oh, the king's going to know that I'm getting power, and he's going to come and get me. But Nehemiah didn't let that distract them. He didn't give in to the temptation for this distraction. Because he says, "They were all trying to make us afraid, saying their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done." If they have given in to this fear of the consequences of their work, then the work wouldn't have gotten done. So what did he do? He prayed. "Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." There will be people who come in our lives to call us names, to insult us, want us to get scared by other people's reactions towards us. We cannot let them distract us from doing the work of the Lord, from serving Him, from completing our wall. But we can't do it alone. Like Nehemiah, we need God to strengthen our hands. We need to pray to Him to strengthen us. Nehemiah faced another distraction, another attempt. Verses 10 through 14. "Afterward, I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was a secret informer. And he said, 'Let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night they will come to kill you.' And I said, 'Should such a man as I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in.' Then I perceived that God had not sent him at all, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way in sin, so that they might have cause for an evil report, that they might reproach me. My God, remember Tobiah and Sanballat, according to these their works, and the prophetess Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets, who would have made me afraid." Nehemiah trusted this Shemaiah. This was a person within the city of Jerusalem, who was a Jew, from what I could read. And he was going to his house for assistance, for advice, for prophecy. The King James and NIV have the phrase that he was shut up or shut in his house. This might mean that he was just trying to live a solitary life, kind of like maybe a monk in our kind of language now, but he was wanting to be solitary and be close to God so he could meditate. But this man wouldn't meet Nehemiah in his home, so he suggested meeting in the temple, shut them in the temple in order to be safe. Nehemiah saw this distraction right away. He knew that only priests could enter the temple. Nehemiah wasn't a priest, so he would be sinning if he had entered the temple. Nehemiah realized that Shemaiah had been hired by these men who were out to get him, out to distract him, to try to trick Nehemiah into sinning, which would lead him to not anymore be leading the people. He wouldn't be able to lead the Jews anymore if they knew that he had sinned, to distract him from his work, finishing the construction on the wall. There may be people or other types of distractions in our lives that if we follow them or follow that distraction, we'll sin. And we won't be able to complete God's work, at least for a time. So we need to, as Nehemiah knew the rules, he knew that only a priest could go into the temple. We need to know the rules. We need to know what God wants of us. We need to know how he wants us to act, talk, behave, think, so that when a distraction comes our way, we can see it for what it is. We can see that if we follow it, it'll lead us to sin. Throughout this story, Nehemiah prayed to God for assistance, for strength, for support, for justice. We cannot expect to complete our wall, to complete our work, to continue with our work, if we do not pray to God. To finish the story, two more verses from Nehemiah 6, 15 and 16. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. So the wall was finished in 52 days. And it happened when all of our enemies heard of it, and all the nations around us saw these things, that they were disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. Finally, the wall was completed. Nehemiah had reached his destination. He had kept his attention on his work. He had fought off the distractions to take his eyes off the road, his hands off the wheel, and his mind off of driving. Interestingly, it took them 52 days to rebuild the wall. That sounds pretty quick. 52 days. But as it said in chapter 4, verse 6, the people had set their mind to work. It is going to take us longer than 52 days to build our wall, longer than 52 days to work for God. Our walls are going to take a lifetime to build. We are never going to complete our walls. We are going to be building our walls, doing our work for God every day of our life. Because if we take a day off, that's the day we look down from the road and read a text and crash. The people around them, in Nehemiah 16, it says that for they perceived that this work was done by our God. We are never going to be able to complete our wall. We can't do enough work. We can't build the wall high enough, so to speak, to complete it. It is going to be done by God. Jesus is going to complete our wall. Jesus will complete our wall. With his sacrifice, he did the final work to get our wall completed, that will complete our works. But we still have work to do. Even though he'll finish it, we can't take a day off. Again, that line from the highway patrol officer, What is worth losing your life over? What distraction is worth losing your life over? Do you want to pay attention to the distractions in our lives? Or do you want to pay attention to God and to Jesus? Fortunately, though, if we do have an accident in our spiritual lives, if we focus on the distraction, our spiritual life doesn't have to be over. We have been blessed to have a way to have that accident forgiven. We can have that accident erased and forgiven because of the sacrifice of one man who didn't give in to the distractions. He didn't look away from the road once. So if you need to start building your wall, start doing the work of the Lord and serving Him, or if you need to start rebuilding your wall. If your wall has been built before or partially built and it's been burnt down, you have the opportunity to have that wall rebuilt. And if you need help with that, you are invited to come forward and take advantage of the sacrifice that Jesus made.